This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Live and Learn. I'm Lee Chui Lin. This month, education specialist Frog Asia is partnering with St. Anne's College from the University of Oxford to give Malaysian students a chance to experience a world-class education. Liu Yeo from Frog Asia and Tim Gardam of St. Anne's College are here to explain the nature of this collaboration. Welcome to the show. Welcome. Liu, what's the purpose and objective behind the project? Could you tell us a bit more about it?
Well, Frog Asia, we're an education technology company and we're passionate about making a difference through education. So through the One BestariNet project, you might know the Frog Learning Platform and 4G Internet is in all government schools in this country. That's all 10,000 primary and secondary schools. And our vision really is to leverage on that technology that is in school and give everybody across Malaysia, no matter where you are, access to top quality learning. And we're really excited to be working with St. Anne's College, University of Oxford, with Tim and his team of professors who are here for a week to work with us, to work with Malaysian students, 175 of them at the summer school this week, learning from a variety of subjects directly from these professors. And then we have a conference at the end of the week for the public. And I guess all the content, I mean, the most exciting thing is that all the content from this collaboration will be put up on Frog for everybody in the country.
How did the partnership actually come together?
Well, we've been at St. Anne's and at Oxford interested in Malaysian students for a long time. There's a great tradition of Malaysian students coming to Oxford. And I've noticed how very talented they were. We had some very good scientists, in particular from Malaysia, as undergraduates. Very good women scientists, too. Indeed, Liu read material science at St. Anne's and got a master's degree in material science. So I thought that if we were going to get the best students to come from Malaysia to Oxford, and we really do want them, the best thing to do is to try and get them young and to inspire students who might think of Oxford as a dream and say, you, if you're good enough, if you're determined enough, if you've got the talent and potential, we want you. And we thought the best way to do that was to come here and find them in Malaysia so that they could meet professors, they could understand what it's like to be taught in a university, very different from a school, and to excite them so that now at the age of 16, they've got 2 years before they decide what they're going to do, and this gives them a start.
Let's talk about that finding process. You know, how did you select this sort of talented pool of students to attend summer school?
Well, there are 175 students at the summer school. We wish we could have more, but spaces are limited because we wanted the classroom sizes to be small so that they get quality teaching. And the selection of the students, they are both international school students as well as government school students. And with the government school students, we've worked with the Ministry of Education to identify these students based on their academic results, based on their extracurricular activities, and also a recommendation from their teachers. So they really are the top students in this country. They don't just come from KL and PJ, they come from all across Malaysia.
We were looking for students with potential. We were looking for students who had the potential to be something really interesting by the time they were 21. And it's so often the case that students think this is beyond our dreams. I really hope that some of these students get to Oxford one day. What really matters, though, is that they've got the potential and they've got the instincts to think, I can go to university now. What do I want to study? And I think what really is important about this week is they get inspired by ideas, they get inspired by the subjects, and they understand that the knowledge that you gain at university is of a different order to that which you gain at school. And this is really opening the door to them. And their contact with really quite senior professors at the University of Oxford, people who are world-class in their field, is something that you don't often get.
How do you go about doing that within a relatively short period of time, getting people inspired by these subjects and getting them to understand? Because, I mean, I didn't attend Oxford, but I know that attending university and attending secondary school in Malaysia are, you know, completely different things.
I think the most important thing about the way we're approaching this is we want it to be interactive. We want the students to talk, to share, to bounce ideas off each other. We've offered a selection of seven modules, and each student can choose to do four, and they do one a day. And I've been going around watching my colleagues teaching them. It's quite interesting to watch a teacher teaching 16-year-olds. These are professors who spend most of their time with research students or with undergraduates, and I wondered how they would get on with people so young. What's so interesting is the way the students immediately step up, and to watch the excitement that the professors feel teaching them. I think for a professor, it's really exciting to see someone encounter for the first time in their life an idea which reminds that professor of where they began. And so we'll encourage them to take hold of an idea and run with it. I was watching a class this morning in politics and philosophy, and you could tell from the students had never done anything like this before. They were being asked at first, when is it right to intervene in protection of human rights? And they were set up as a debate. And to watch the confidence which grew among those students, boys and girls together, as they debated that idea, was fascinating. Then the class swerved to philosophy, and they were asked to talk about the limits to kindness, what were the various moral dilemmas were put to them, and to watch the students being teasing them their way through those moral dilemmas, reaching conclusions for themselves. That's what I think makes it different to school.
Looking at St. Anne's in particular, what sets it apart from other colleges within Oxford?
Well, Oxford probably looks a bit peculiar from the outside because it's a very well-known university and it is one of the top five universities in the world. The way it's different, say, to Harvard or Yale, is it has colleges. It breaks itself down into these small groups, so it's much more personal. Oxford's 20,000 students in total. It's a big place. But the colleges make it possible for each student to be known as an individual. And we've got about 400 undergraduates and about 250 graduate students. And we're a modern college, relatively, in Oxford's terms. After all, Oxford goes back 800 years. We were only founded about 150 years ago, and we really only became a college in the past 60 years. So we're a modern college with a very particular ethos. We believe in opportunity. We believe in finding students who otherwise might not get to Oxford, who Oxford might otherwise miss out on. We believe in intellectual collaboration and generosity. We want students to work together because I think that's how you succeed in the modern world. And we also believe in diversity and internationalism. I think our message is that whoever you are and wherever you come from, if you've got the talent, you should come to us. Because I think it's really important in the modern world that you see people from Europe and Asia and America and across different societies and different nationalities working together from a young age, because that's the way they're going to work in the global economy.
Considering then that St. Anne's was a women-only college until 1979 and you're the first male principal, how much did that play in your mind during the hiring process and when you said, OK, I'm going to take this job?
Well, 1979 is a long time ago, but I'm very conscious of the fact that I'm the first male principal. And I had a lot of convincing to do, particularly of some of the older alumni who were very proud of its traditions as an all-women's college. I think what I'd say is this, that the college was founded in to be absolutely committed and to promote emancipation, to give people opportunities. And it was absolutely right for its first 100 years that that should be defined in terms of gender. And gender remains very important. But emancipation, opportunity, that sense of possibility takes many different forms. And I think what we're doing today is in direct line of succession to those original ideals. It's still, I think, there are major issues in terms of gender. One of the things I've been so impressed by in Malaysia is the fact that young girls here effortlessly think of themselves as scientists. That's not the case in Europe. And so we would always look, wherever the student comes from, to think, what can that student be like in two or three years' time? And in the UK, there's an increasing multicultural society, a range of social backgrounds and nationalities. We want to represent that. We also want to ensure that those students interact from students across the world. And I can tell you, the Malaysian students are really important in that regard. The president of our student union at the moment at St. Anne's, called the Junior Common Room, he's from Malaysia. And he was elected by all his fellow students, and he's been a brilliant leader.
That is so nice to hear, I really must say. Looking at what you did prior to this, you worked in television for close to 30 years. Why did you leave?
Well, I left for a number of reasons, but I think universities and media are closer than you might think. The ideas in universities, I found, are often the basis for the best television programmes. I believe television at its best, when it has a public purpose, and that's what I believe television should have, essentially connects the most interesting minds in the world to a much wider audience that's hungry for fresh ideas. And in a way, that's what the summer school is doing. It's taking the interesting and best minds of the professors and connecting those to an audience of students hungry for fresh ideas. Television is interesting. It's great for a time. But I found there's a natural link between what a university does and what one does in television. I'm still quite involved in television and media in the United Kingdom. I'm one of the regulators of broadcasting in the United Kingdom. And wherever I look at the future of media, particularly in a digital age, one realizes the most important thing that it does, the most important thing that media does, is create an informed, tolerant society of individuals able to play their part in democracy. I think universities do that with young people. I think broadcasting at its best does that for the whole of society.
With the ongoing trend of former media personalities assuming roles in academia, with colleges, with universities being led by non-academics, is there a danger then of university culture changing? Or perhaps danger is the wrong word. Is there potential for university culture to change?
At Oxford, I don't think it's fair to say that media people are running the university. The university is run by academics. The core to universities these days is that they are absolutely in the forefront of scientific research and research in the humanities and social sciences. And the academic competition is now worldwide. Whenever we advertise for a professor, it is competed for people from across the world. One of the things I love about Oxford is I sit around and it never occurs to me when I'm at a meeting the country which the people in that meeting may have come from. And often there are 12, 14 nationalities around the table. It just does not matter. I think what the people in media are doing at Oxford is they're bringing their skills to help. They're bringing their skills as a counterpoint to the skills of academics. I think we ought to be quite good at communicating. We are quite good at working out the narrative of the university. I think we're quite good at reaching out to students. But it isn't in that sense a supportive role. The core to a university is academic excellence.
I'm speaking today with Tim Gardam of St. Anne's College from the University of Oxford, as well as Lu Yeo, Executive Director of Frog Asia. Up next, we find out more about their collaboration, as well as Wan Bestari Net. You are listening to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. You are listening to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture. I'm Lee Chui Lin. In the studio with me today, Tim Gardam, Principal of St. Anne's College from the University of Oxford, and Lu Yeo, the Executive Director of Frog Asia. So Tim, we've been getting your perspective on what St. Anne's is doing here, what you're doing over in the United Kingdom as well. Lu, what got you interested in the education sector?
Well, I think, education is really fundamental. A good education really sets people up for their lives, and I think that everybody deserves an equal opportunity to quality education. I've been privileged to have a good education myself, and I went to a government school, so I don't think there's a difference between people in government schools or international schools, and I'm determined that everybody should have that chance. So,
how does Frog Asia differ from other online learning platforms?
Well, Frog Asia is a learning platform, and I guess it's the only learning platform in all 10,000 government schools in this country. So the great thing about that is that no matter where you are in Malaysia at the moment, whether you're in a rural village in Sarawak or right in the center of KL, all the material that teachers create can be shared throughout. So imagine yourself being an English teacher teaching English literature in KL, and you have exposure to that. A new teacher who might be posted to Sarawak could just download the same material and use that for her class. And so there's a lot of collaboration and sharing that can happen across Malaysia. And Malaysia's the first country in the world to have that. So it's amazing.
Tim, in running a college, how much do you think about disruptive innovation and the role of technology? Because I think we can all agree that when it comes to education and technology, there have been huge leaps and bounds that have been made in the last decade or so.
I think about it all the time, probably because of my own background. I think there are a number of factors at play here. The really brilliant thing about the Frog Asia network is that it is allowing kids of all ages to collide with information and learning they otherwise wouldn't do, and using a mobile 4G network to do this, putting the syllabus in the cloud, giving access through Chromebooks to students across school classrooms is really eye-opening. It wouldn't surprise me if the students themselves aren't ahead of their teachers in knowing how to make the most of it, because that's always the case in schools these days, that when it comes to intuitively understanding how to use digital technology, it's the students who lead the teachers.
Because they're the natives.
Absolutely. And they intuitively understand what it is they want to get out of that material, and they find their way around. I think there's a challenge to universities, even at the higher educational level. And it's something like this. In the future, there is going to be a superabundance of information out there. One thinks of MOOCs, the massive open online courses that you can access worldwide. And lectures and facts and articles are there if you know where to look. But what isn't there on an online world is the sense of community you get from living next door for 3 years, a very important age, with people of very different minds to your own. I think in future one of the things universities will really do well is they will muddle people up and give people the space to think for themselves and understand that people with different types of minds have very different ideas, but you can link to them. And I think one of the things I've learned from a university like Oxford, where the students are in these small, intimate college groups, is that they learn really a lot about their work and their minds and their lives from each other. And the jobs of the professors is to focus that learning, to focus that understanding, and to give them the potential themselves to do well. I don't think you can get that type of experience online. So I think in future you're going to get a hybrid. You're going to get people having access to information worldwide and to courses on platforms from wherever they are in the world, and that's fantastic. But I think there will still be a real role for those personal interactions that really take place face-to-face. And one of the things we're trying to do with this summer school this week is to give an experience that face-to-face contact with professors here in KL, not saying to these students, you ought to come all the way to Oxford in order to experience that.
Lou, looking at the present and how we can use technology here in Malaysia, with One Bestari Net, what did you learn from the rollout?
Well, I think that nothing is as easy as it seems, for sure. But look, it's a long-term project. And I think that what I've learned is that teachers and students are hungry for technology in their classrooms. The difficulty is how. And when they understand the why, it's obvious we're in a globalized world where technology is core in all that we do. Even outside the classroom, why should it not be integrated in the classroom? But the teachers and the students, well, teachers especially, need a lot of support. And that, I feel, is our role as Frog Asia, to be able to, and us working in partnership with everybody else in education, to help support teachers integrate technology into the classroom. Like Tim says, we don't believe that, you know, you're going to replace all textbooks with all computers and that's it.
And replace all teachers with, you know.
Definitely. The teachers are definitely so important to mentor the kids. And if they have access to the learning online, the teachers can then focus their teaching best with their students. So if you know what your students are weak at, you can give them a video to explain the concept. You can then explain the bits that they don't understand. It's the blended learning approach, a flipped classroom approach, and I think that's very relevant. I've seen teachers use it and they love it. So I think it's a lot about supporting them through this, through using technology in the classroom.
Despite close to 9,000 schools having already been equipped with the system, the Auditor General's report showed that login statistics were between 0.01 to 4.96%. Why do you think that remains the case?
It's no longer the case.
Okay.
But I think that, look, in every school, there are challenges in devices. There are the platform rollout. You know, following that, you have a device rollout. And so there are still schools with devices that are quite old and need to be replaced. And so having to adopt technology in the classroom takes time. It's first a mindset shift for the teachers to even use it in the classroom, having time in the timetable to go into the classrooms, the computer labs, and then the students, if they have access to it, no problem. And we're seeing that at the moment. So I think you're just going to see those numbers roll out.
Is connectivity infrastructure an issue? I mean, broadband remains one of those things that we all like to think we have tons of access to, but the truth is, you know, it can get patchy here and there. For the schools that can't get broadband, you know, how do they cope?
I think whenever you have access to internet, it's never enough. The speed is never enough. The capacity is never enough. You always want more. But the government's provided a specific amount of bandwidth to schools, and the schools have to make do with what they have. And then the parents come in to support the schools and give them more bandwidth as necessary. And I think the government will also support in giving additional bandwidth to schools who are using quite a lot of it. So I think there's always going to be demand for more. But with the bandwidth that is there, teachers are and the students are really enjoying what they have.
A perennial issue in Malaysian education is also the urban-rural divide. So with rural schools where, you know, you have children who are struggling to cope with even basic tenets of things like language and mathematics, is perhaps going online a step further than they're ready to make at this point in time, do you think?
I think going online speedens up the process. There's no way you can be left behind. You are left behind if you're not online. And I think the great thing about the fact that they're online is that they have automatic access to top quality learning. So think about the fact that they can go directly to YouTube and learn about, you know, how the heart beats if they don't have a biology teacher that is able to explain that to them in a way that they understand. There are so many types of learners in the world. Some are visual, some are auditory, some are kinesthetic, and technology helps with the students' learning. So I think it actually accelerates the learning. And if we've done tons of programs with schools where we've actually had, say, an SPM revision class, and a teacher, top teacher in physics in our offices, and then having schools from across the country log in to learn from him. So with technology, you can actually spread that access to the quality learning immediately, and thousands of people can benefit at the same time. So yeah, I think that's what's really exciting about it.
Going back to the issue of broadband coverage briefly, One Bestari Net's parent company was fined 2.4 million ringgit for missing its deadline. And as of June 12, 2014, only 88.9% of the 10,000 schools have been completed with broadband access, leaving more than 1,000 schools still waiting. What's the latest update?
I think that the schools in Sarawak, who are actually the schools who are not connected at the moment, are going to be connected in the next year or so. So you'll see that happening.
Tim, going to, you know, being the first male principal, going back to that then, what does being the principal of St. Anne's College actually entail in terms of your day-to-day, in terms of what you need to deliver?
A principal is a strange position at Oxford. The heads of Oxford Colleges have all got different names, actually. They're provosts, they're presidents, they're masters, and the principals, and the wardens as well. I think we've all got more or less the same job. And that is to craft a strategy for the college within Oxford University and contribute to the overall strategy of the university. Because we believe in research-led education, because we believe in professors directly teaching students, a lot of what we're doing is keeping our eyes on the students themselves. Universities can be quite anonymous places, huge universities in which people are given a chance to learn for themselves, but no one really knows who the students are. We like to think that there is someone in the university at all times who knows how a student is getting on. And my job is to ensure that the college does that. In the UK, we're going through a revolution in higher education. It's moving from essentially being publicly funded to being privately funded. That gives a lot of stress for students and their parents. We've got to ensure that we can support that. I spend a lot of my time ensuring that we can persuade benefactors who are incredibly generous to ensure that students have the opportunities that previous generations had because the state paid for them. And the other thing I think one does is one tries to ensure that there is a constant link between the research dynamic of a university. Those academics who are broadening and stretching the limits of our knowledge all the time, and young 18-year-olds coming in to learn for the first time. And the most important thing about a university, I think, is that it ensures that those collisions of understanding between people with a depth of experience and people with all the potential come together. And those people, those young people, go out from the university to make society better. And the head of a college, first of all, makes sure that that ethos is intact, makes sure that it has the potential to do that, and also to make sure the books balance so that we can keep doing it.
With the sea change that you referenced, you know, going from private to public to private, and really just with the technological revolution, with everything happening, what further challenges do you foresee in tertiary education over the next decade, and how are you kind of anticipating that and trying to cope?
I think one has there's no option but to ensure that as much of your civic society is as well educated as possible. But that will mean that universities will do different sorts of things for different people according to their potential. I think in the UK, the best universities will continue and have to continue to compete among the best in the world. It's quite remarkable that of the best universities in Europe, all bar one, if you look at the top 20, are in the UK. One of the key things I think about Britain and is that its higher education is international. It's, I think, something that all of us at Oxford feel passionately about, that there should be access for international students to come to Oxford. We want to raise more money for international student scholarships because at the moment we're conscious that students in the EU and students in the UK have a better financial deal because of indirect government support. And we also want to ensure that we are open to students, and you see a lot of pressure coming from the universities about the visa issue. We want a student to come to Oxford, we want to make sure there are no obstacles in that student's way. So I think you're going to inexorably see more and more people demanding education, because in a global economy with so many more billions of people coming into the market, what is going to distinguish a successful society, a successful economy, is the way that people think. The way that people handle complexity, the way that people have new ideas. Innovation is a tired and hackneyed phrase, but it's absolutely true that it is in that sense of rethinking knowledge, making those connections across disciplines, that the new ideas will come on which a developed society will depend. And I think that is going to matter whichever society you come from. In different ways, students will go back to improve the societies which they come from, which they want to serve.
Lou, closer to home, what are the challenges of education in Malaysia going forward?
Well, I think the use of English is a huge challenge in Malaysia, but I think something that everybody wants to address. So I think a lot of people are concerned about us being globally competitive. But I also know that many people are also very concerned about education and stepping in. Lots of parents as well are getting more involved in the education system. So I think that's a great step.
Perhaps this question is jumping the gun a little bit, but how would this collaboration move forward after this year?
I think we've got to look at it carefully, see what's been good. I've got no doubt that we're going to continue to come back to Malaysia. I've been coming here for 5 years, and it's been very interesting to see how the number of Malaysian students coming to Oxford has increased, and to my college has increased substantially in that time. We are looking for those students of real talent and potential, and I'm sure we'll think what's worked well, what can we improve, but look for other ways and similar ways to continue the relationship. The relationship, I think, between Malaysia and the United Kingdom is going to be fundamentally based on education, and we have so much in common, not least the English language, that it's Oxford's role, I think, as one of the great universities in the world, which has many, many alumni here, Malaysian and people now living in Malaysia, to ensure that link and that connection is really close.
For both of you, for both St. Anne's and Frog Asia, what are the benchmarks for this to be considered a successful venture? Tim, you mentioned that you've seen the number of students increase. I assume that that's one of them.
I would like as many of these students to come to Oxford as possible. But I'm realistic, only very few will. It's very, very competitive. But what I really hope is that these students, whatever university they go on to do something which they will look back at this course and say, it was this this summer school that set me on my path to fulfillment. I think it's very difficult to bring sort of numerical metrics into a course like this. This is something which is based on confidence and on belief and self-belief. But I think what's been important is our professors have given freely of their time to come, and the students have been given a chance to come for free, and it's in those interactions that we expect something to happen. What? We'll wait and see.
And for me, it's the opening of their minds. The exposure has given, I think, our Malaysian students an idea of what is possible and even inspired confidence in themselves. As they've engaged in these conversations with their professors, they've realised that they have a lot more potential than they probably give themselves credit for. And I think that that confidence is going to, you know, stir up in them just things and dreams that they can then aspire to. And I believe that these students, I've watched them in these classes, and they're definitely going to make a big difference to the future of Malaysia and the world. So knowing that, you know, they've had this opportunity with these top people, top minds of the world, that I think it inspires them to dream big and bold. And I think that's so important. So that's what I think they'll take away from this week, and that's really exciting.
Beyond Summer School, the Leaps of Knowledge Conference will be happening this weekend and is open to the public. Lou, could you give us the details?
Yeah, so the Leaps of Knowledge Conference is on Saturday, the 25th, so this Saturday, from 9 to 4, and it's a full-day conference. You get a snapshot of what the students have seen at the summer school. We have also live mock interviews, which probably is going to be one of the most interesting things. Oxford is absolutely famous or infamous for these live mock interviews that really scare the students who are applying, and you can never prepare enough for them. So students can come and watch what that looks like in
a preview.
Yeah, a preview into both the arts and the sciences. So we have two sessions on that. The application process, we have a panel of students who will talk from a student's point of view about what life is like at Oxford. And I think that's really important because hearing from the professors and the subjects is great, but hearing from people who are there makes it more realistic that actually if there's so many Malaysian students there, then I could be one of them. And we also have an exhibition hall that gives you a snapshot of what it's like at Oxford. So it's going to be a really exciting time for those who couldn't make it to the summer school. This is a fantastic opportunity to engage with the professors, engage with the students. And it's open to public. So we just encourage everyone to log on to leapsofknowledge.com to register, or they can walk in. It's at Garden International School in Wonkera.
All I'd say is interviews are interesting. They're not that scary. I wouldn't want anyone to be put off. We want the students to do well. We'll ask some difficult questions, but we'll really will them on to succeed and give good answers.
Okay. It sounds like the kind of thing that you can try and talk it down, you know, but it's still going to be scary for the students.
They enjoy it, really.
Thank you both very much for joining me today. I've been speaking with Tim Gardam, Principal of St. Anne's College from the University of Oxford, and Lou Yeo, the Executive Director of Frog Asia. We've been discussing summer school and the Leaps of Knowledge Conference, St. Anne's, and just everything in between. You've been listening to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.